All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's been a long day, hasn't it? Wow, I'm amazed you're still here. Last session of the day. And, of course, we've saved the best for last because we are going to party on Windows Phone for a while. How about that? Can't think of any better way to spend the late afternoon before everyone goes home, goes to dinner and stuff, talking about Windows Phone. What we're going to do here is talk about the differences between Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8. My assumption is that you're a Windows Phone 7 developer, or at least have played with it enough to kind of know your way around it, but that you're interested in doing Windows Phone 8 development. So I want to teach you about the delta between them, the new things that you need to think about in Windows Phone 8 and the new features that you can take advantage of. So this very much focuses on the delta again between Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8. Let's start at a high level. The very first thing you should know as a developer is that Windows Phone 8 is largely compatible API-wise with Windows Phone 7. I spent quite a bit of time recently porting some of my old WP7 apps to WP8. I've been very, very pleasantly surprised at how few changes have been required. In fact, for many of you, you will find that your WP7 app runs unchanged and unrecompiled on Windows Phone 8. I'm going to say more about how that works in a moment and also tell you what to do if you do find that there's something that breaks. But even if you recompile the app for Windows Phone 8, generally speaking, you should find that you don't have to change anything because Windows Phone 8 has been designed to be backwards compatible with Windows 7. Now, there are some significant API changes, primarily in terms of the new features that you can take advantage of in Windows Phone 8. Obviously, we'll be talking about those. But also wanted to point out, in case you didn't know this already, that there is a new kernel in Windows Phone 8. The old Windows Phone 7 kernel was based on Windows CE, actually based on the Windows Compact Framework, which was itself based on Windows CE. One of the biggest changes made to Windows Phone 8 was they swapped that kernel out and brought in the Windows 8 kernel. So your Windows 8 apps, or your Windows Store apps, and your Windows Phone 8 apps are running against the same kernel. Now, the changes that took place in the kernel don't surface to you as a developer, except in very, very rare circumstances. There's a different garbage collector, for example. So if you were doing something in Windows Phone 7 that you shouldn't have been doing to begin with, like relying on the order in which objects were finalized by the GC, then you may find that that code has to be modified in Windows Phone 8 because it breaks. Aside from little things like that, you won't notice any differences arising from the fact that the kernel was swapped out. What you will notice is that there are lots and lots and lots of new APIs, several thousand of them, as a matter of fact, that you can take advantage of in Windows Phone 8. A lot of things you couldn't do in Windows Phone 7, like use Bluetooth to communicate directly between two Windows phones or a Windows phone and some other device, not only possible in Windows Phone 8, but relatively easy to do as well. We're also going to talk just a bit in this session about other features like NFC, which I think is one of the most exciting new features of this platform. And there are lots and lots more. Bottom line, Windows Phone 8 is largely backwards compatible with 7. That eases the porting process. It allows your Windows Phone 7 apps to just work on Windows Phone 8 in the vast majority of cases. But there are lots and lots of new features you can take advantage of as well. In fact, let's talk about the API landscape and a bit about where we're going to be going with this. Back in the days of Windows Phone 7, the API that we wrote to was the .NET API, a special version of .NET that was built for the Windows Phone. You'll be glad to know that that API is still there. Even though we have new sensor APIs, new location APIs, and things like that in Windows Phone 8, the old Windows Phone 7 style APIs are still there. They've also added new functionality, new types, new type members to the .NET for Windows Phone runtime. We'll be looking at some of those new types and type members as we look at individual features. The team also did something else really interesting. They took WinRT from Windows 8 and they ported it over to Windows Phone 8. Now, they didn't port the entire thing. They ported a subset of it. You can see from this diagram right here that the WinRT itself contains around 11,000 members, and of those 11,000, about 2,800 of those were brought over to Windows Phone 8. While they were doing the port, they enhanced WinRT. They added some features and APIs to it that don't even exist in WinRT over on Windows 8. So what it means is when you write a Windows Phone 8 app, you'll probably be using a combination of .NET APIs and WinRT APIs. And it's kind of interesting that to the extent that you do use WinRT APIs, the code is compatible between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. You can cut and paste it. You can put it in a portable class lib. Actually, you can't put it in a PCL unless it's .NET code. But you can literally cut and paste source code from a Windows 8 app to a Windows Phone app if it's WinRT code, and it will just work in both places in the vast majority of cases. Now, another piece of news in Windows Phone 8 that I'm not going to say much about is you can now write apps in unmanaged code. If you are building game programs, for example, and you value performance above all else, and you want to write in unmanaged C++ rather than, say, C#, you can now do that. You can even use things like Direct3D and XAudio 2 to make that game come alive and to make it as performant as possible. I'm going to be focusing on what's new over in the managed code arena. So we'll be looking primarily at what's new in the .NET for Windows Phone runtime and in the Windows Phone runtime, also known as the WPR. Now, just a quick word about compatibility. I've already said your WP7 apps, for the most part, will just work on Windows Phone 8. One thing that you might benefit from knowing is that when you run a Windows Phone 7 app on Windows Phone 8 without recompiling it, the runtime inserts a quirks mode layer between your app and the .NET runtime and the Windows Phone runtime. The job of that quirks layer is to provide some abstraction so that APIs that work slightly differently in Windows Phone 8 still work the old way, at least when they're called into from a Windows Phone 7.1 app. Now, if you recompile that application, then it no longer runs in quirks mode. The assumption there is if there are changes in API behaviors that would affect your app, since you've recompiled it for Windows Phone 8, you're aware of those changes and you're going to compensate for those. One thing I do want to say about quirks mode is it's not 100% effective in masking out the changes. It gets 99.9% of the way there. But there are some things that quirks mode doesn't attempt to fix. I've listed a few of those here. For example, the pivot and panorama controls. If in a Windows Phone 7 app you were relying on manipulation completed events to be surfaced from those controls, they're no longer surfaced in Windows Phone 8, and quirks mode doesn't attempt to surface them. So it's little things like that that constitute the breaking changes for quirks mode that could break a WP7 app on WP8. The good news is, if you go to the link at the bottom of this slide here, Microsoft has actually done a very thorough job of documenting all of the breaking changes from the big ones to the little ones. So if you test your WP7 app on WP8, you find that something is breaking, this is a good source of information to go to figure out why. Now, compatibility, we're done with. Let's talk about new stuff. One of the nice things about writing an app for Windows Phone 7 was that every Windows Phone 7 device had the same screen resolution, 480 by 800. I loved it, because over in the Android world, where they have something like 16 million different screen sizes and resolution scales and stuff, it's a pain for developers. We never had to worry about that in Windows Phone 7. Well, there's good news and there's bad news. In Windows Phone 8, we have new devices like these awesome Lumia 920s with much, much, much higher resolution screens. So does that mean that when I begin designing my UI for Windows Phone 8, do I need to design it in times, once for each of the different screen resolutions are supported? Believe it or not, no, because of something very, very clever that the team has done. Like Windows 8, Windows Phone 8 uses something called resolution scaling. When your app is running on a very high resolution device, things are being scaled to fit that device. What that effectively means is, no matter what type of device your app is running on, you can design it as if it were running on a palette, a canvas, if you will, that measures 480 by 800. Just as if you were working in Windows Phone 7 and that were the only resolution that were supported. Then the system will do scaling necessary. If you, for example, drop an image whose stretch property is none so that it doesn't get scaled by the XAML runtime, you may think, well, that image that's only 480 pixels wide isn't going to look very good on a Lumia 920, which has a horizontal resolution of 768. But what's going to happen there is the system is going to scale that image up by a factor of 1.6 so that it does fill the extents of the screen. Now, that does mean there may be some pixelation occurring, which is why here are some good things to keep in mind as you design your UI to make sure that it looks good and works well on all the supported resolutions. And it's actually a fairly simple list of things to wrap your arms around. Number one, don't hard code the sizes of root containers. Like if you use a grid as the root element on your page, you never should have hard coded the size, the width and the height to begin with, because you want it to expand to fill the amount of available space. And you still do that in Windows Phone 8. That way, if it's a control that's going to lay out its items based on available size, the control will do the right thing for you. When it comes to providing assets that don't scale naturally, non-XAML assets, for example, like bitmaps and videos, what we're encouraged to do is to assume that we're going to be running on a WXGA device, one that has a horizontal resolution of 768. That way, if you're running on a lower resolution device, the XAML runtime can scale that down and no pixelation will occur. You could provide bitmapped assets that assume that you really are on a 480 by 800 screen and allow those to be scaled up, but you might see some pixelation occurring. If you want to be absolutely perfect and provide pixel-perfect images for all the different resolutions, you can find out at runtime through a property named scale factor what the current resolution scale is. It'll be 1, 1.6, or 1.5, and you can use that to dynamically load any bitmap assets that your application relies on. That way, the system doesn't have to do any scaling, and you control that scaling yourself. One final note, if you provide a splash screen for your app, you should make that make the dimensions of it 768 by 1280. What that's going to do is allow that to look good on a device of any size. If necessary, the runtime will scale it down to a screen whose physical dimensions are 480 by 800 pixels. But you may have noticed that I put a little asterisk on that bullet point. Let me tell you why. Have you noticed that when you create a new Windows Phone 8 project in Visual Studio, by default, the project does not include a splash screen image like it used to in our WP7 projects? Have you noticed that? Do you know why? Unfortunately, we haven't done a terrific job of documenting this, because Windows Phone 8 apps typically load and start much faster, not just a little faster, much, much, much faster than WP7 apps. So the reasoning was you may not even need a splash screen in a WP8 app. Now, if you're curious to know why they load and start up much faster, do a search on MDIL, Machine Dependent Intermediate Language, or do a search on Windows Phone Compile in the Cloud. It turns out that in Windows Phone 7, of course, you know if you published apps, you uploaded a ZAP file to the store. The ZAP file contains resources and intermediate language. Then when a user downloaded that app to their phone, they were downloading the ZAP file containing all that stuff. But that meant each time the app started up, all of that IL had to be jitted. It had to be just in time compiled for the native processor. Microsoft has come up with a really, really cool strategy to provide, rather than IL in these packages, to provide MDIL, Machine Dependent Intermediate Language. It jits much, 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 much faster than ordinary IL. And when you download a Windows Phone 8 app to your phone, that's what's actually being downloaded, not ordinary IL, but MDIL. So if you notice that these things tend to start up a lot faster on your new Windows 8 phone, and you've also wondered why the Visual Studio team does not by default include a splash screen in a Windows Phone 8 project, now you know. Compiling in the cloud, MDIL, is the answer. The next thing you should know as someone who is moving to Windows Phone 8 is that they've given us some new options with tiles. You may have noticed on your start screen, most tiles, not all, but most, can now be toggled between three different sizes, small, medium, and wide. So if you want to support all three tile sizes, if you want to let the user choose between them, you need to provide three tile image assets of the dimensions that I specify on this slide in your project. But there's more than that. Windows Phone 8 defines three new tile templates, allowing us to make our tiles come alive more than we could in Windows Phone 7. Specifically, it adds templates called the flip tile template, the cyclic tile template, and the iconic tile template. When if you want to use one of these templates for your app's primary tile, you declare as much in the manifest. Once you do that, you can't change the primary tile type at runtime. Secondary tiles, however, since they're created at runtime, if you choose to support those in your app, then you can choose at runtime which one of these three tile templates to use for your secondary tiles. Now, I'm going to show you some examples using these new tiles, but let me highlight one of these for you for my first demo. It's the new iconic tile in Windows Phone 8. This diagram here shows what it looks like in all three sizes, and the reason it's called an iconic tile is you get to provide an icon, an image with transparent background pixels that show up on the tile. You also have the option of showing a badge, a number from 1 to 99 on that tile, and if you choose to support wide tiles in your app as well, you also have the option of adding text to the tile. All of this content can be changed dynamically at runtime. If you were building a mail app for something and want to show the user how many mail messages are waiting in their inbox, you might set up a background task to periodically talk to the mail server. Then, if your app has an iconic tile, you could update the badge on that tile to show the user how many messages are now waiting on them. Now, how do you make a change to a tile? To help us do that, Windows Phone 8 introduces three new tile-related classes. They're called cyclic tile, data, flip tile data, and iconic tile data. This shows how I can update the content on my app's iconic tile at runtime. I'm assuming here that I want to update a primary tile, not a second one. I get a reference to that tile. I new up an iconic tile data structure, specifying, in this case, a new badge and some new text to appear on it. I also have the freedom to set background images and things like that if I want. And then at the end, I call update on the tile to apply those changes. Again, you can do that from the app itself, or you can do it from a background task if you want to do that. So let's see here. Let's see if this actually works. I mean, for all you know, I could be making up everything I tell you, right? So I'm going to do some demos so you'll know I'm not making it up. What I'm going to do first is run a little app here. And at the end, and I may need your help in remembering to do this, I'll give you a URL to my SkyDrive from which you can download a zip file containing all of these samples if you're interested. Brought this little app up right here. We're going to run it in the emulator. And actually, it doesn't matter whether we do the XGA or VGA. I'll just use the default. And this app does use an iconic tile, and it demonstrates how to update that iconic tile at runtime. Now, the emulator is going to have to start up here. It'll take it just a moment. And while it does that, I'll tell you a little bit more about the other tile types. Flip tile allows you to specify content for both the front and back of a tile. We actually gained similar capabilities in Windows Phone 7.1, the so-called Mango version, but they formalized that in Windows Phone 8. The cyclic tile allows us to specify or to provide up to 9 images. We hand the images to the OS. The OS rotates those images on the tile, and if we want, we can keep that thing fresh by constantly changing the images. In a moment here, we're going to see an app start up that has a really great UI. I'm really good at building these kinds of UIs right here. There's nothing in there except a XAML grid. That's because the whole point of this one is that it has an iconic tile, which to show, I'll need to go over here and pin it. So let's do that really quickly. We'll pin that thing there. Go back out to the start screen, and you'll notice that this iconic tile has sort of a sunburst icon on it. It's also showing a badge, which is the number 1. What I do here is I write to isolated storage a record of every time the app is started, and each time it's started, I update that badge on that iconic tile so that if you go back, you can see how many times the thing has actually been launched. Sort of a trivial example, but it's a good example of something that we can do in Windows Phone 8 that was not possible in Windows Phone 7 using an iconic tile. Since I launched it a third time, you see that that badge count has increased right there. Now, so we can get through as many of these demos as possible. I'm not going to take the time to show the code for this in Visual Studio because it's almost identical, or at least it's similar to what you saw on the slide. Some of the examples I do are more complex, and we are going to take the time to look at the code in Visual Studio. But before we do that, let's go back to PowerPoint for just a moment and see what else we can get into with Windows Phone 8. So another thing that Windows Phone 8 does for us is it gives us some new and improved controls to play with. Not a lot of them, but enough to make life interesting. So first off, it makes some interesting improvements to some of the existing controls that came forward from Windows Phone 7. The pivot and panorama controls, for example, which have become so used in so many WP7 apps, have now been moved to ROM so that they execute faster than they did in Windows Phone 7. The web browser control has been updated. The WP7 web browser control was based on IE9. The new web browser control is based on IE10. And one reason that's important is that if you're using HTML5 to build cross-platform mobile apps, IE10's HTML5 surface area is probably twice at least as much as that of IE9. So a lot of things you could not do in a web browser control with regard to HTML5 in Windows Phone 7, you can now do in Windows Phone 8. Another thing they did was they fixed the progress bar control. You may remember that in Windows Phone 7, when you displayed a progress bar control in an indeterminate state where the five little dots were chasing each other across the screen, it drained battery power precipitously. They actually tried to fix that in version 7.1, found out they were going to have to make some really deep changes to it, and they ended up giving us the progress control that we could display in a system bar. You'll be glad to know that they have made those deep changes to the progress bar control, so now you can use it anywhere, anytime, even in an indeterminate state, and you don't have to worry about the battery being drained if you're running on battery power. Now, in addition to improving some of the existing controls, they also gave us some new controls. There's a brand new map control replacing the Bing Maps control. You probably know Microsoft and Nokia worked together to provide a whole new mapping platform for Windows Phone 8. The Bing Maps control is still there, by the way, for backwards compatibility reasons, but going forward, you'll probably want to use the new Nokia map control, and I'll say more about that in a few moments. Something else I find kind of exciting is a new control called the Long List Selector, based on a control, I think it was called Jump List Selector, if memory serves me correctly, in the WP7 toolkit. So just to highlight one or two of these, let me show you what you can do with the Long List Selector. Now, the purpose of this control is when you're showing the user a long list of information, like all the contacts on their phone, for example, there could be hundreds, even thousands of those. A long list selector gives you a two-tiered navigation model so that you can easily select or find a particular item in that long list. In fact, this was patterned after the contacts app that's already on your Windows phone. You know, when you're going to dial a phone number, you need to find that person. You tap a tile with a letter on it. Then you see this view that shows a bunch of square tiles with letters. You tap the one with the letter of the first letter of the last name and the person you want to contact, and it goes directly to that place in the list. That's what a long list selector is. I'm going to show you a demo in a moment, but declaring one. It's a simple matter of doing this. Again, it's now part of the runtime. It's no longer part of the toolkit, so you don't have to bring any external assemblies. Once you've declared your long list selector and told it that you do support grouping, in other words, you do want the user to be able to zoom out and view a jump list, you can then provide a couple of data templates to it. One specifying what the items rendered out in this list should look like, the other specifying what the group headers should look like. Now, before I show you this demo, let me show you a couple of other things in code. And I put these slides in here because the documentation on this is not incredibly good. It's kind of hard to figure out the very first time you use one of these controls how to structure the data classes that you use with it. So let's suppose that we wanted to build a contact list that makes all of its items easily acceptable through a long list selector. We would begin by defining a couple of classes. I'm going to call them person and group. And on the next slide, you'll actually see what those classes look like. They're very simple. Then, in my code, I knew up a list of groups of persons, and I initialized the groups with some person objects and also provide to each group object a key, the first letter or the letter that I pass to its constructor. What's magic about that is this. If I structure the group class this way, if I build in a property named key, then the long list selector knows about that and can automatically jump to the corresponding group when a tile that has the same key as that group is tapped. Now, if that's a little bit hard to picture, let me show you what it looks like here in the emulator. So I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. I guess we should stop debugging. I guess I never did that. And I'm going to open a different project here named Long List Selector Demo. And, you know, I just realized I'll need to run this on my phone because I'll bet there are no contacts in the Windows Phone 8 emulator. Well, we're going to find out. Let's point it away from the device and into the emulator. And let's just see if we get any contacts at all in there. Looks like we do not. So we won't do more with that demo. I will show you this. I realize it's going to be almost impossible to see since we don't have a camera for this thing. But let me just show you what it looks like on a real phone. To the extent that I can hold it up here. Oh, look at, oh, awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm going to need you again later as well. So here is that long list selector on my phone. And you can see that there's several contacts in there. These are all the contacts that really are on my phone. And you can also see those headers there, the little blue blocks with the first letters. So what I'll do is tap one of those. And now we zoom out in the long list selector. The long list selector has done this for me. I tap one of the items like W, and that should take me straight to the W's in my contact list. Thank you very much. So, real quickly, if you want to see how this thing works, if you want something to pattern your own code after the first time you use a long list selector, this is a good example to go by. And if you look right here, you'll see that in here I'm declaring a long list selector. Let's make sure we're on the screen, and we are. I'm declaring it right here. With this data template, the group header template, I'm defining what those little blocks with the letters in them should look like. Those are the group headers. And with this data template, I'm defining how each item, each contact in this case, should be rendered out. And I'm just rendering out as a simple text block. Obviously, you could render it however you wanted to. But there are a couple of other things here that are really key. Number one, this is grouping enabled equals true right here is what tells the long list selector that I want it to zoom out and show a concise list of all of the groups if the user taps one of those group headers. Also, to provide some instructions to this control what the rendering should look like when it's zoomed out, I set the jump list style property to a resource that I named long list selector jump list style. I tried to come up with something longer and failed. That's pretty long as it is. But here is where it's defined. I defined it right here in the same XAML file so that it's easy to find. And a couple of keys here are you're specifying how you want those group headers rendered out when we're zoomed out looking at the jump list. And this grid cell size right here specifies how much room is allocated for each of the items in the jump list. In effect, what I'm saying here is that each of those little blue blocks in the jump list should be 113 pixels square. There are a lot of options in this control that I haven't shown here, but this is a pretty good one to look at the basics. One other thing to look at, too, is this helper class, which I'll be honest, I didn't write most of this. Much of it came from MSDN. I made some modifications to it, which is a generic class that you can use. You can pair with a list of contacts or a list of everything else to provide an alphabetical jump list to the items in that collection without having to do all the work to manually go through and build the group keys yourself. So this alpha key group was important in making all of this work. I could probably spend 15 minutes in the source code here. I'm not going to do that because we have other things to talk about. So let's go right back here. The nice thing about Windows Phone 8 is it's like new presents at Christmas. In fact, it's like the ultimate Christmas tree. Every time you take a new present out, two more presents appear. How about that? You never run out of great features. So another thing that Windows Phone 8 does is it adds some new launchers and choosers to the OS. Now, launchers and choosers have been around since Windows Phone 7. Windows Phone 7.1 added a few new ones, and there are five new ones that you can leverage in Windows Phone 8. For example, there's something called a Maps task. And also a Maps Directions task. I'm going to show you those two on the slides. One of my favorites is something called Share Media task, which I'm going to demo for you in just a moment, which makes it really easy to build the same kind of functionality into your app that the built-in apps on the phone have when it comes to sharing pictures to Facebook and things like that. But just a couple of quick examples. With Maps task here, you can display the new Nokia map which by default will be centered at the user's current location. You don't have to write a single line of code to make that happen. You can specify a different location if you want with one additional line of code. But the cool thing is search term. I can put in coffee, pizza, hotels, or something like that, and when this map control comes up, it will already have those push pins showing locations that have pizza, hotels, coffee, and things like that. Couldn't be a whole lot easier than this. What about Maps Directions task? What if you want to provide turn-by-turn directions from your application? One way to do that would be to new up a Maps Direction task, as I'm doing here. What I'm doing is feeding it a geo-coordinate, in this case, that of the Space Needle back in Seattle. And then when I call task.show, the UI that you see on this slide is going to appear, and it's going to provide turn-by-turn directions for the user to get from their current location, which is the default, to the Space Needle. Now, when you run that on the Microsoft campus, it's quite reasonable because the Space Needle is maybe 15 miles away. I suspect if you run this from here, it's going to be a very, very long drive with lots and lots of turns to get to the Space Needle. In fact, we'll need a very long bridge to get over the ocean. So let me show you the share media task here. And if I may, could I ask you to show my phone here again? So once I found out you could do that, now you're going to regret it because I'm going to be calling you over here a couple of times. So I want to run a little app here for you that shows off the new share media task. So let's use the built-in jump list to go down to this demo. And let's see, where's share media task demo right here. Okay, so it's a simple app with two buttons that say shoot and share or select and share. So stay right there if you will. I'm going to pull this over and I'm going to shoot a picture of you and we're going to upload it to Facebook. How about that? Shoot means shoot a picture, not like I'm going to shoot you. I know when Americans say shoot, everyone ducks, right? So, all right, everybody smile because you're going to be on Facebook, at least until I delete the picture. So I just took your picture, and I'm going to accept it. And now let's go back over here because I have now launched a new share media task. You see this menu right here. It's the same menu that appears when you select, say, a picture that you've already taken on the phone and you press the little ellipsis. If I want to share this thing to Facebook, I'll just do this. We'll say Facebook. And I could type in a caption there, but I won't. I'll click that. And hopefully my phone is connected. I think it is. Thank you. I'm asking you to do that one more time if you don't mind. And let's pop over to Facebook and see if indeed it has uploaded. So let's see here. And it has not, so let me make sure that I have an internet connection on this phone right now. Since I changed rooms, I may not. If you'll allow me to do this really quickly, shouldn't take but a moment. Wi-Fi is turned on. And actually, I did not have a connection. And I have my data connection turned off over here because it's horribly expensive for Americans to do data roaming over here. So let me get this in here real quick, this wireless key. I can remember it. Good test of memory right here. Apologize for not thinking to do this in advance. All right. Let me make sure that I now have an active connection, and we'll try that again. So I'll just tap on IE and see if something comes up. And so far, so good. Let's find out. Cross your fingers. Yeah, it looks like it's going to work. And if so, then I should be able to shoot that picture again. So if you weren't smiling the first time, be sure you smile this time. I do have a network connection now. So let me go back and launch that share media task demo again. I'll tap the shoot and share button. Maybe Facebook just didn't like this side of the audience. Maybe I should do a different side. So I took the picture. I'll accept it. Once more, I've got that share media task menu. I'll select Facebook. And I'll tap that so that the phone can upload to Facebook. And this time, since I have a wireless connection, I think that if we go back here and go to Facebook right now, you're going to see yourself there. How about that? Didn't know I was going to make you famous, right? Ah, and look at that. There we are. How about that? Yeah, and everybody was smiling, too. Now, I realize that you may not have wanted your picture put on Facebook, so I'll quickly delete that. but it was that easy. And let me show you the code that required to do that. Even I can write this kind of code right here. So let's go back to Visual Studio for just a moment. And let's open up the project called Share Media Task Demo. Right here. And if you look in mainpage.xaml.cs in this project, here's what you'll find. Pretty simple stuff. When I tap that shoot and share button, I newed up the camera capture task. This is just like in Windows Phone 7. Wired up a handler for the completed event that fires when a picture has been taken by the user. And in there, I newed up a share media task. I set its file path property to e.original file name, which is a reference handed to me by the OS for the picture that I just took, and called show. So three lines of code was all it took to bring up that menu and allow the user to share that media out to Facebook. Pretty good stuff right there. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, there's fans back here.
Sorry, is there no default behavior that is not working with Facebook that will give you a message about it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So when I didn't even have an internet connection, why didn't it give me some indication? Actually, it doesn't throw an exception or anything like that. All the showing the task is really doing is displaying that menu, which is part of the OS. If you've ever tried to upload something to Facebook on a Windows phone and it fails, generally if you go back to it, it'll tell you that something went wrong. That's the only way that I would have of knowing that, and there's really no way the code can find out, unfortunately. Okay, what else can we find if we dig under the covers here? So, just real quickly, not only is there a new map control based on some of the cool mapping stuff acquired from Nokia, but there are new classes with new mapping APIs, specifically classes in the Microsoft.phones.maps.services namespace, that's a new part of .NET for Windows Phone in WP8, that contains classes letting you do geocoding, reverse geocoding, and acquire turn-by-turn directions. Now, suppose you are going to provide turn-by-turn directions in your app, but you don't want to use that built-in turn-by-turn directions UI given you by Maps Directions task. In the old days, you would have had to go out to a web service somewhere, probably Bing services, to get turn-by-turn directions to display however you want them. Now, you no longer have to go out and do that because we have code support for it right here. So as an example, suppose I wanted to geocode an address. Here's a fairly well-known address, 1 Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington. You all know that's Microsoft headquarters back home. What I'm doing here is assigning that string to search term. Then I call query async on this geocode query object that I instantiated. That's an asynchronous call, obviously. But by the way, the parts of WinRT they brought over to Windows Phone 8 supports the async await pattern that's so awesome in Windows 8. When they added new async APIs to the .NET part of Windows Phone 8, in general, those don't support the async await pattern, which is why I'm having to wire up an event handler here for a query completed event before I call query async. In other words, the infrastructure is not here to allow me to simply await this thing. So if that works, then the phone tells me what latitude and longitude corresponds to that address. If I prefer to reverse geocode, I can do that as well. Here I'm plugging in a geo-coordinate. I think I was using either the Space Needle or the Microsoft Campus. I don't remember. But I call query async on the reverse geocode query object, and it attempts to convert that latitude and longitude into an address. In fact, we're going to try that and see if it works. And I honestly don't know if it's going to work here in Europe. We're going to find out. You know, sometimes in the U.S., we assume that there's only one country in the world. Then we're shocked to find out we're not the only country in the world. So let's try this. Let's see if reverse geocoding works over here. It worked in Belgium, so I would assume it would work in the Netherlands as well. So let's see here. I'm going to bring up Map Services Demo. This is a pretty simple app. I'll run it in the emulator. All it does when it starts up is it uses the location API, the new WinRT location API, rather than the old WP7 one, to find out where I am, to get a latitude and a longitude. Then it passes that latitude and longitude to a reverse geocode query object to attempt to convert it into an address. If it works here, then we should see the address of where we are right now. So let's see. Well, so much for that. But If I, that's because I'm in the emulator right now. If I go over, let's pick something else. Let's find something relatively close to where we are. Like over here, maybe. How about London? Yeah, London's a good place. I'm going to click right there, put a pin there, and then I'll go back. I'll shut down the debugger and run this thing again, and it should tell me that we're at some address in London. It looks like it's not going to cooperate in doing that. So let me try something real quick, and I won't bother you again here, but I do have this on my phone. I'm just curious to see if we run it on a real device, if it might work a little bit better. So I'll tap Map Services Demo. Okay, and it says 36 Johan de Witlaan, The Hague, South Holland, then in parentheses, Netherlands. Is that the right place? Okay, so it didn't work in the emulator, but it worked pretty well right here. At least if you can trust me. Do you believe that's really what it says here? That is what it says, because I had no idea what the address was right here. So it did work in reverse geocoding an address here in Holland. Now, let me shut down the debugger here and get into some other stuff that I think you may find interesting and compelling. In fact, this next one, if this doesn't make you think, wow, this is a platform I want to be a part of, I don't know what will. In terms of networking, Windows Phone 8 got much, 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 much richer than Windows Phone 7. They added a Bluetooth API, for example. I found that particularly exciting because I have a hobby. I build and fly large radio control jets, like large ones as in about the size of an average car here in Europe. And a lot of my friends have a little thing called an AR Parrot drone. I don't know if any of you have seen these. It's these little electric quadcopters that you can fly from your iPhone. They're really amazing devices. You can't fly one of those with a Windows phone, or at least you couldn't with a Windows 7 phone, because that iPhone or iPad is using Bluetooth to talk to that aircraft to make it hover, to make it turn and bank and rise and fly around and stuff like that. Now that we have Bluetooth and Windows Phone 8, we could build a Windows Phone 8 app that drives an AR Parrot drone or anything else. But Bluetooth is just a small part of what they added. They also added an NFC API. If you haven't seen NFC before, it stands for Near Field Communication. I believe it's the most important thing that's happened in networking, especially mobile networking, in many, many years. In fact, I'm doing an entire session on it tomorrow. I've got some demos that will just knock your socks off. They've also done a few other things. They brought the Windows.networking.sockets namespace over from WinRT so that you can write socket code and share it at the source code level between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. Unfortunately, they did not bring over the WebSocket classes in that namespace. So while there is great WebSocket support, as in HTML5 WebSockets in Windows 8, there currently is none in Windows Phone 8. That's not a big deal because there are other ways of doing the things that you might want to do with it. Really quickly, with Bluetooth, there are two basic use cases for Bluetooth. One is we've paired our phone with a device like a radio control aircraft or the speakers in our car. And then we want to use Bluetooth to stream music to the speakers, to send commands to the aircraft or what have you. The other scenario is we want to take two devices, like two Windows phones or perhaps a Windows phone and an Android phone, and we want to connect them through Bluetooth so we can do true peer-to-peer communications between the devices, maybe in a collaborative game program or something like that. Both of those scenarios are supported in the new Bluetooth API. This is the exact same, by the way, Bluetooth API present in Windows 8. So if you've used this API there, you have a big head start on using it in Windows Phone 8. So a couple of quick examples here. This is how in Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, I enumerate all Bluetooth devices that my phone has been paired with. Once I have found the device that I want to communicate with, let me skip this slide and come back to it. Then I can connect up to that device using a stream socket, in other words, just a TCP socket, by calling connect async, as you see right here. Now, if I back up a slide, in fact, I'm going to go back two slides. It's a little bit ugly, but the way you find out when you call this peer finder find all peers async method that Bluetooth has been turned off on this phone by the user is by catching an exception and looking for this special H result you see here. If that happens, you may want to suggest to the user that they turn Bluetooth on, and you can make that really easy for them by using the connection settings task and taking them directly to the Bluetooth settings page on the Windows phone like this. Now, this is how you connect to a paired device. There's a slightly different set of code that you write if you want to just find any and all Bluetooth devices around you that are willing to talk but that haven't been paired with you. That is supported as well. But let's talk briefly about NFC, near field communication. I don't know if they're doing this here in Netherlands, but at Tech Days down in Belgium, every attendee's badge had a little NFC chip on it. And when they walked into sessions, they would hold the badge up to a little device that would record the fact that they were there. Are they doing that at this conference as well? Okay, that's too bad because we get to keep the badges. Those are rewritable NFC chips in them, so we got free rewritable NFC chips in our badges. So NFC is a new networking technology. In the future, we'll be using it to make contactless payments. You'll keep your money electronically on your phone. You'll buy a train ticket or lunch or something by tapping your phone to an electronic payment terminal. But even before that comes about, there are some awesome things you can do with it today. It's called proximity networking because it doesn't work over very long distances. In fact, to talk to each other through NFC, two NFC chip or two devices equipped with NFC chips have to be within a couple of centimeters of each other. But the cool thing is not only can they exchange data while they're in proximity to each other, but if they want to continue talking over a higher bandwidth connection after they've been pulled apart, they can, using NFC, negotiate a connection, a TCP connection over Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or Wi-Fi Direct, so that they can then be pulled apart. You and I could be standing in two different points in this auditorium with a network connection for true peer-to-peer communications. I'll demonstrate all of that tomorrow in the NFC talk. What I want to do now is show you one little taste of what I'm going to cover in there. Number one, one of the two classes that make up the core of the NFC API in Windows Phone 8 is one named Proximity Device, which literally represents a device that is proximity enabled, that is one that has an NFC chip in it. One of the things Proximity Device does is it allows you to send messages to other NFC equipped devices or receive messages from them. It also fires a couple of events named Device Arrived and Device Departed that let you know when another device equipped with an NFC chip enters your proximity. Now, when you see that another device has entered your proximity, maybe you want to send it a quick message. One way to do that is to use the proximity device class's publish message method. Now, this is a basically a way for two Windows devices to talk to each other. It could be two Windows 8 devices, two Windows Phone 8s, or a Windows 8 device and a Windows Phone 8 device. There are other parts of this API that let you communicate with non-Windows devices. But if I want to send a message to another Windows device that's in my proximity through NFC, then I call the publish message method. I tell it what type of message I'm publishing. As you'll see on the next slide, a device that wants to receive this message subscribes to a message of the same type. And if I want, I can pass in the third parameter to publish message a callback method that will tell me when the message has been transmitted and another device has received it. On the receiving end, if I want to receive data through NFC, then I call a proximity device method named subscribe for message, specifying the same message type as the device on the other end is publishing. And then I provide, again, a callback method. And if a proximity device sending that message, in this case one of type windows.sample, enters my proximity, then that callback will fire and I will be handed that message. Now, if I may ask you one more time to help me out, I'm going to try something here with two devices, and I hope I can hold them all here without dropping something. So let me start with this one, with a little app that's on my phone that looks like this. So when it first comes up, you see an empty grid of squares, but I can use my finger and I can draw in patterns. This is a phone adaptation of the Game of Life, the famous Game of Life from the October 1970 issue of Scientific American magazine. This is actually an app that I published in the Windows Phone Marketplace back in the WP7 days. Now what I can do is start a simulation running using some simple genetic algorithms to determine from one generation to the next, which cells live, which ones die, etc. But it's not the game of life that I really care about right now. What I'm going to do is draw a pattern in here. Let's draw something that looks mildly interesting. And that's a stretch to say it's mildly interesting. Do you realize, by the way, entire doctoral dissertations have been written around this game? Not my implementation of it, but the game itself. People who have spent hundreds, thousands of hours finding interesting patterns that replicate themselves, that spawn other patterns and things like that. So suppose I found a really cool pattern, and I'd like to share it with another user, maybe another Windows Phone user who has this app on their phone, or better yet, maybe someone running Windows 8 on a tablet. So stay right there if you will. And I do have a version of this app that I've built for Windows 8 as well. Let's see if we can get that up and running. I'll need to turn this tablet on. I had it turned off to conserve battery power. So let me get it up and running, and we'll see if we can do the same thing here that we did right there. Once it gets to the login screen, right there we are. Hope I can remember my password. All right. And let me go run this app here, which is right here. Now I'm going to turn it like this so it looks kind of like a big old phone. You can see that same grid there, and I can draw on it as before. And just like I could on the phone, I can slide that up and I can start a simulation running. And I can stop the simulation. Now let's clear that off. Now here's the hard part. I'm going to try to do this without dropping anything. I still on the phone have this that grid that I want to share with someone. And in the taskbar of this phone app, I put a little button in there that will share this the state of this game, this grid through NFC. So now what I have to do is hold this up to where exactly where the NFC chip is on the back of this tablet. This is the hard part. Let me make sure I've got it oriented correctly. Actually, I'm going to have to do it like this because that way I know where the NFC chip is. Let's make sure I'm still sharing. And look at that. We transferred. Can you see that? Can you see that those patterns match right there? That's NFC at work. That's just one use case. That's just the tip of the iceberg. If you're interested, come back and see the fuller length session tomorrow. Thank you. All right. So, yeah, we can have devices talking peer-to-peer. We've got all kinds of cool stuff that we can do in this environment. Now, what else do we have? Are there other interesting things in Windows Phone 8? How about voice to text, text to voice, voice recognition, speech recognition, all sorts of interesting stuff. If you want to incorporate voice commands into a Windows Phone 8 app, it could not be simpler. They've built some new APIs that allow us to do this. These APIs are not part of the expanded .NET runtime in Windows Phone 8. They're actually part of the new stuff that they added to the WinRT APIs that they brought over from Windows Phone 8. Actually, I take that back. These are part of the expanded .NET runtime, and you know how you know? Because the namespace name begins with Microsoft.phone and not with Windows. So I take back what I said a moment ago. Some simple examples before I do a demo for you. Suppose you wanted to convert text to speech. Maybe you want to have your app talk to the user. You simply now new up a speech synthesizer object and call SpeakTextAsync. Now, these methods are awaitable, as you can see. Which gives me that simplified syntax for writing async code. And by the way, it turns out on a Windows Phone 8 device, there are over 30 different voices installed. If you try the one that actually has the index 1 in the installed voices array, it speaks in English with a German accent. So it's kind of cool. How about going the other way? How about converting speech to text? Have you noticed, by the way, you know, if any of you have kids, you can empathize with me on this. Kids don't call each other anymore. Have you noticed that? They text each other. And they don't call their mom and dad. They text them. Well, I have three teenagers at home. So every time I get in the car and I'm driving somewhere, my phone lights up. My kids are texting me something. Well, it's not a good idea to text while you drive. It's illegal in most U.S. states anyway. So one thing I use quite a lot on my phone is the ability to speak a text message and have it sent to one of my kids. Wouldn't it be nice if you could build that kind of functionality into your own app? Maybe you're building your own phone version of Notepad or something, and you want a user to be able to dictate, you want that converted into text. It is so incredibly easy to do. You now new up a speech recognizer UI object. you call recognize with UI async and await it. And that will bring up this UI that I've pasted in from a screenshot right here. And once the user has finished speaking and tapped the little button saying finished, then the await will return and you're handed the result through the recognition result.txt property. It's actually amazingly accurate. My wife, who's an iPhone user and kind of like Siri, recently she said, you know, your Windows Phone does a better job of recognizing that text than Siri does. I felt really good about that. You can also convert speech to text without popping up a UI. You can do this. You can add grammar lists of your own to the speech recognizer class. Notice the lack of the UI at the end. This one doesn't have a UI. Then, when the user speaks, if what they spoke was recognized as something that you added to the grammar list, that grammar list can be as long and as complex as you want, by the way, then when you call recognize async, you await it and it comes back, it'll tell you precisely what word in that grammar list the user spoke. But that's not all. They go deeper with the new voice commanding API, which I'm going to demonstrate for you here in just a moment. You've always been able to launch an app on a Windows phone by saying, for example, open Angry Birds. You can still do that. But what you can also do now is you can pass voice parameters into the app when it's launched so that your app can consume them the same way it might consume query string parameters. So I could say, start Angry Birds and go to level 3. And if Angry Birds chooses to support that with this new voice commands API, not only would it start up, it would go directly to level 3. So let me show you just real quickly here, since we don't have a lot of time and there are a couple more things I want to show you how this works. It begins with something called a voice command definition file, a VCD file. It's just an XML file. You write it, you add it to your project, and this is a sample of what it looks like. You basically define the commands that your app will accept when it starts up. It has support for wildcards, for optional parameters, that is optional spoken commands, and other things as well. What I'm doing here is, for example, is saying, when you look in the middle where I say show in square brackets, color in curly braces, the square brackets mean show is optional. The curly braces mean this is a replaceable parameter, and I can separately define a phrase list with all the different values that I recognize for that parameter. Now, I have to tell the phone OS that I wanted to use that VCD file, so I go over into app.xaml.cs when my app starts up and use this code right here. And then, the way the voice commands are surfaced to me when my app is launched is as ordinary query strings that are text that came from the voice commands that you've defined over in that VCD file. So we're going to try this. I'll have to use a real phone, so if I may impose on you one more time, you've been a real lifesaver here, by the way, since we didn't have a camera sitting on the podium there. I want to run a little app for you that I think you'll agree is kind of fun. In fact, if I may, I'm going to stand like this so that I don't have my back to the audience. I've been really bad about that. Let's see, I want to go to a little app named Voice Command Demo right here. So here it is, and I launched it by tapping a tile, obviously. Excuse me. But I'm going to go back and I'm going to launch it in a different way. Voice Demo. Not quite it. Must be the echo. Voice Demo. So much for panning Siri, right? So let's try it this way. Voice Command Demo. Well, it worked in Belgium this morning. One more time. And I'm going to turn it towards me here to maybe blunt some of the echo. Voice Demo. Ha ha ha, look at that. So there we go. Oh, wait a minute. Well, it's not going to cooperate there. Let's do this. Let's go back and launch it manually, because launching it from the voice command and telling it what color to set the rectangle to is not all that exciting. Here's something that's a little bit more interesting. I've incorporated voice commands into the app itself, so after it's launched, you can continue to interact with it with voice. So, yellow. Blue. Scream. How about that, huh? Now watch this. Shake. Yeah. Now, you can't hear it because I'm not wired up here, and I actually have my sound muted right now. But when you tell her to shake, she comes back with a snarky comment, and she rotates between different ones. Like, she likes to say things like, "Was that as good for you as it was for me?" and things like that. So I did that just to add some humor to it. This is part of the zip file I'll give you the URL for. If you want to build in voice commands into your app, you can look at the source code. You can see how easy it is to do. And thank you one more time. I think that's the last time I'm going to have to bother you. Let's see here. We still have, I believe, about 8 or 10 minutes, so let's see what else we can talk about. I just want to mention this briefly without spending too much time on it. When they brought over a part of WinRT from Windows 8, they brought over a whole new set of sensor APIs, APIs for talking to the accelerometer, the gyrometer, the compass, the inclinometer, and stuff like that. They also brought over a whole new set of camera APIs. Now, you need to realize that the old sensor and camera APIs are still there, and they still work. You can continue to use them if you want. But going forward into the future, if you're using the sensor APIs or the camera APIs and you want your code to be 100% compatible with the same code in a Windows Store app, then you can start using these new WinRT APIs to do that. And just to give you an idea here, here is Windows Phone 7 style code that accesses the accelerometer. Basically, I knew up an accelerometer object, wire up a handler for reading change events, and you may remember in Windows Phone 7 that you had no control over the frequency at which those events fired. They were hardwired to fire 50 times a second. This code still works in Windows Phone 8, but if I prefer, I could use the new accelerometer API brought over from Windows 8 in WinRT. It's slightly different, and it does give me a few options that the old accelerometer API did not. Now, for example, by using a property named report interval, I can tell it how often I want those reading changed events to fire. There's also now something that came over from Windows 8 in the accelerometer class that didn't exist in Windows Phone 7, and that was a shaken event. You've seen apps probably, I think Urban Spoon is one of them, that do something like scramble data when you shake them. In Windows Phone 7, you had to read the accelerometer and set some threshold, like 2 G-forces or 1.5 Gs, to realize that the thing is being shaken. Now you no longer have to do that. You can just register a handler for shaken events, and if the user shakes it, you'll be notified of that. So I won't do this demo here, but I will tell you in the samples that you download, I have an app called Accelerometer Demo. It's one of those apps that rolls a ball around on a table, a labyrinth-type game. Basically uses accelerometer data and high school level equations of motion to make the motion seem as realistic as possible. And the significant thing about it is that if you look at the code, you'll see that I'm not using the old Windows Phone 7 accelerometer APIs. Instead, I'm using the new Windows Phone 8 WinRT accelerometer APIs. Good way to just compare and contrast. One other thing that Windows Phone 8 adds to the equation is the ability for your apps to integrate with the lock screen. Now, this is something that comes over from Windows 8 as well, although it's slightly different here. The lock screen, of course, is that screen that's displayed when you first turn your phone on or when it times out. It's that screen right there. And if you have a Windows Phone 8 device in your pocket and pull it out and look at your lock screen, you may notice there are a couple of little icons at the bottom showing you things like on mine. Whoops, let me go back there. Let me re-lock it. On mine, I've got a couple of custom ones on there, but one shows me how many Outlook email messages are waiting for me from my Exchange server. In Windows Phone 8, your app can integrate with the lock screen. It can put icons or badges, numbers from 1-99 on the lock screen, and it can do so from background tasks. So I've got an example that's an app. It uses a background task in Windows Phone 8. It wakes up every 30 minutes, fires a couple of calls out over the internet to first find out where I am and then find out what the current weather conditions are at that location. Then it places the current temperature at that location in degrees Fahrenheit, on the lock screen. And the cool thing about it is as I travel from place to place, I don't have to go into a weather app and tell it to use my current location. This thing just follows me around wherever I go, always using the current location. And every time I turn my phone on, I can see exactly what the temperature is wherever I'm at. Now, the only downside to this new lock screen integration capability is that it's done through the app manifest, but they didn't get around to updating the Visual Studio manifest editor to allow you to do this visually. So you do have to make some manual changes to the app manifest. Specifically, you have to tell the Windows Phone runtime through the manifest what image, what icon will be your icon on the lock screen. You do that with the device lock image URI option that you see here. Again, I had to manually add that to the manifest. You also have to manually add to the manifest one or more expressions indicating how your app integrates with the lock screen. You can tell the system that you're going to change the background of the lock screen, that you're going to update a badge or icon count on the lock screen, or that you're going to update the text on the lock screen. Now realize that you cannot force your way onto the lock screen in Windows Phone 8. It's the same in Windows 8. The user has to add you to the lock screen. This is the settings UI they use on the phone to do that. Once you have added the stuff you saw in the previous couple of slides to your manifest, once your app is installed on that device, if the user goes to this screen, they will see your app in the list of apps that they can optionally give access to the lock screen. If they then choose to do that, to add your app to the lock screen, now you can update the content in the lock screen. Now, I won't have time since the session's almost over to go through the code, but let me tell you this. In the sample that I built, again, I'm using a background task to update the lock screen every 30 minutes or so, getting the current location and the current temperature. The way you physically change content on the lock screen for your app is you treat it, you treat the lock screen as if it were a tile, and you update the badge on your tile or the text on your tile. Not only does that update the application's primary tile, if the application has been added to the lock screen, those changes show up on there as well. The name of that project is Lock Screen Demo, and the final thing I want to do here is give you a URL from which you can download these examples if you care to do that and play with them yourself. So let's go grab that real fast. I'll pop out to my SkyDrive to get it, and I'll put it up here so that everyone can see it. So let's go to SkyDrive, and I'll go into my downloadable samples, and the ones I'm looking for, Windows Phone 8 samples right here. Whoops, actually I have people with a view link. Let's click that again. Usually that works almost immediately. Let's try this. Let's try that again, go to sharing. I'll do get a link, create, and then shorten. There we go, that's what I was expecting. And let's paste that into Notepad real quick so everyone can see it. And I'll shoot the font size up as well. Let's make it really big so even someone with failing eyes like me can see it. All right, so that URL, remember since it's a SkyDrive URL, those last six characters are case sensitive. You can go there at your convenience. I'll leave these up there for a while. You can download a zip file containing these Visual Studio solutions that I just showed you, plus a couple that I didn't show you. Well, with that, we're going to call the session to a close. Go out and build some great stuff with Windows Phone 8 if you have questions. I think we're the last session of the day, so just come up here and we'll talk as I tear down and head out. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you back tomorrow.